This week on the Nittany Dispatch, we discuss Jim Harbaugh's move to the NFL, Bill O'Brien's move to a Big Ten rival of Penn State, and the players coming back for Penn State, along with special teams coordinator Justin Lustig. This week on the Nittany Dispatch. Hello and welcome to the Nittany Dispatch. I'm John Sauber, Penn State football beat writer at the Center Daily Times. She is Audrey Snyder of The Athletic. And Audrey, it has been a couple weeks and things just keep on happening.
Happy January, John. We made it this far. Yeah. It's good to see your face.
Is it really?
Debatable. Yeah, debatable. Yeah. No, it's, this is always an interesting time of year because it's like stuff happens when you kind of least expect it. But then you do have the obvious things that happen. And I feel like at this point, Jim Harbaugh finally leaving Michigan after a national title, it's finally happened, right? And so Jim Harbaugh is going back to the NFL in a move that, I don't know, always just felt like a matter of when and never if, right? Like, I think that's kind of the big piece that moves in the Big Ten this week. And you might say, well, yeah, Penn State doesn't play Michigan in 2024, but the playoff is expanding, so they very well could. And you look at, you know, the Big Ten now is without who I would say was their best coach. So interesting times.
Yeah. And, it is strange because it doesn't feel like Harbaugh has been there as long as he actually has. Like in my head, like it was like 2018. And then I was like, oh, wait, who was the coach? I was like, oh, no, he went straight there from San Francisco. Yeah. Like it's been almost a decade of Jim Harbaugh at Michigan. Before we get too much further, though, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. Leave those 5-star ratings and reviews. If you're watching on YouTube, go ahead and hit the subscribe link down below. Give us a like. That always helps us out. But no, this was like, it just felt, like you said, a little bit inevitable. Like this was coming eventually. I'm not surprised it was the Chargers. I'm not surprised it was this offseason. Like he gets to send Michigan out on top. And they kind of have the ready-made replacement. And from all of the reporting that I've read, and I'm sure that you've read, like, it seems like it's going to be Sherrone Moore as the offensive coordinator. And that is kind of that. Sherrone Moore, offensive coordinator as the head coach.
Right. Yeah. I did have to laugh when there were the reports circulating Wednesday evening saying that Michigan has to legally have the job posted for a week. Right. Like, it's just one of those funny things about like universities where you have to, you know, technically a lot of times have these jobs open, even if people know probably what you're going to do or what you should do. I think in this case, it makes a lot of sense. For me, it is. And I've got a story up on The Athletic. A bunch of our beat writers in the Big Ten, we did a roundtable Wednesday night and Thursday morning about it, and kind of where do the chips fall in the rest of the conference without Jim Harbaugh? Because the guy was a lightning rod. I mean, whether you liked him, hated him, thought he did everything great by pushing the envelope or thought he was a cheater, right? Like the guy was polarizing. But I mean, I think back to satellite camps, right? I went to one of his satellite camps in Allentown the one year for a big story I was working on. And I drove down there and he's interacting with kids doing all this stuff. And then they were like, yeah, he's not talking to anyone here. And I was like, well, that's great. I just wasted my whole like day off at this satellite camp with hopes of interviewing Jim Harbaugh. And it went nowhere. I'm sure he had to be absolutely maddening to cover on like a day-to-day basis, like just unique, zany guy by all accounts, right?
A little all over the place.
Yeah, like I'm not envious of the folks that had to cover him on a day-to-day basis, just because Michigan has, I mean, you think about the last year for them in terms of the news cycle, and you and I like to complain about things always happening here. Far less scandalous, far less NCAA involved this year from the Penn State side of things, but they got the national championship. Michigan fans will love him forever because of that. And it also felt like, John, I mean, I remember a couple years ago, right, where all of the conversations were, well, should Michigan move on? Is Jim Harbaugh the right guy, right? Do they need to part ways? And I remember that so well because we were having similar conversations on the Penn State beat with James Franklin. And I always kind of think of their tenures similar in a way just because of the time frame. Obviously Franklin's been at Penn State longer than Harbaugh. The job James Franklin took over vastly different than the Michigan job for Harbaugh, But I always kind of compare the trajectories just on the timeline frame, and that he was there for a long time, and you look at what he was able to do and get that team into the playoff and ultimately win it all. So yeah, great time to be Ryan Day. like I think he is now the winner of the offseason in the Big Ten by default.
Well, and especially with some of the work they've done on the NIL front to pad that roster, that Ohio State team is not going to be one to mess with. But no, like I think there are going to be wide-reaching ramifications here with Harbaugh leaving. Mm-hmm. I do think you're right. I think the obvious choice is promoting more. I think it's the correct choice. I just don't know if it's going to be as seamless as I think maybe everyone is kind of expecting it to be. Right, like when Ryan Day took over for Urban Meyer, everything kind of stayed in place. Like Day just took over play calling, took over the offense. There wasn't a ton of change from that perspective. With Harbaugh leaving, it's not that he is not going to be a play caller or what have you anymore. It's that there's already been reporting that defensive coordinator Jesse Minter is going to go with him to Los Angeles, right, which is a massive loss. He's someone who interviewed for the Eagles job last year, Eagles defensive coordinator job last year, was probably going to have more NFL interviews this year outside of the Chargers had he not.
Just got to keep plugging the Eagles, John. Just got to keep plugging him.
Listen, I'm sad, but still, go Birds. But yeah, it was like he was a guy that was lined up to potentially be an NFL defensive coordinator if he wanted to, and is that level of coach. And with more, it'll be interesting to see is he going to call plays on offense still, right? Is it going to be his offense, or is he going to hire an offensive coordinator that does that? Or will, again, if he's calling it, is he just hiring someone like Ryan Day used to, where he would just kind of have an offensive coordinator, but you kind of knew that it was still Day's offense. He was doing what he wanted on that end. He was calling the plays and everything. So they're going to lose staff members. I think that's pretty clear at this point that they're going to lose really good staff members. And, you know, the portal window is open for those guys for 30 days.
Which is huge.
We haven't seen movement yet. I don't know that we will, assuming more stays. But I do think, like, depending on which coaches leave and which assistants leave, there could be an impact there. I'm not saying it's a drastic one, but there could be, you know, some ripples that happen there that maybe guys leave, or frankly, the new coordinators, because that's going to matter here with Moore as a first-time head coach. Oh, yeah. Like, the new coordinators are going to be vital to how successful Michigan can be and how quickly they can kind of keep this momentum rolling, or if it comes to a bit of a halt after Harbaugh leaves.
Yeah, just a crazy offseason when you take a broad view for the sport already, right? Like, you look at it and you say, okay, well, here comes the Big Ten. The expanded Big Ten is coming this year. You add those four more teams into it, and then you say, oh, yeah, Nick Saban retires. Jim Harbaugh goes back to the NFL. Kalen DeBoer leaves Washington. I mean, like, it has been crazy when you look at the dominoes that are falling and that are going to impact just kind of this conference moving forward. And one of those moves, John, was, I think, is very interesting when you look at Ohio State. They bring in a guy that Penn State fans need no introduction to. Mr. Bill O'Brien is now the Buckeyes offensive coordinator. And you alluded to NIL and the amount of resources and money that Ohio State is bringing in, and also the roster that they're assembling.
It's unbelievable. Ooh,
boy, it is insane. And now you add Bill O'Brien to that. Interesting, interesting time.
I think adding, this might be a take, I think adding Bill O'Brien is probably not as helpful as Ohio State wants it to be, right? Mm-hmm. Because I think a lot of what I've read is that Day is kind of, removing himself a little bit from the offense. The offense is going to be the offensive coordinators. Presumably that means that it's Bill O'Brien's offense. And listen, like, he had success at Penn State in incredibly difficult circumstances, right? They had good offenses with the Texans when he was the head coach there. He had good offenses with Tom Brady when he was in New England.
Yeah.
But outside of that, like, the Patriots offense was an unmitigated disaster this year. How much do you want to blame Bill O'Brien
for that?
The talent,
I think, was lacking. I think that's a big piece of it. Yeah.
100%. Like, there is only so much you can do with Mac Jones at quarterback, right? Like, this, and especially in the NFL, where those anticipation throws that he excelled with at Alabama just aren't there because those windows aren't as big anymore, and he has to be able to make tight window throws. So Bill O'Brien was in a bad spot with the Patriots. I'm not, dismissing that. But I also don't think this is hiring an offensive innovator, someone that's going to be on the cutting edge of things. Right. Frankly, like, I would rather have Andy Kotelnicki as an offensive coordinator, and I don't know that it's particularly close. I would, if I were Ohio State, like, the guy that I would have gone after to hire was in state, and that was Joe Moorhead, right? And your colleague at The Athletic, Bruce Feldman, did a story on him potentially being an offensive coordinator candidate in the NFL, which makes a lot of sense to me. But he was, you know, at the forefront of the RPO game in college football, and the kind of guy that you bring in when your offense needs that, when it needs a new voice, right? When you need something different. To me, I don't know that Bill O'Brien is on the cutting edge like that to help this Ohio State offense get to that next level or become something that maybe it sees that it's not right now. That being said, the talent on the team is absurd without a doubt.
That's the piece, right? I've spent some time this week talking to some of Penn State fans, their favorite players from that 2012 roster. Some of those guys for a story I'm working on about Bill O'Brien and about this hire and what it's like for them. And, you know, hey, Ohio State comes to Beaver Stadium November 2nd. That's going to be really weird. I think for a lot of guys, it's going to be bizarre just because it's like, okay, not only did Bill O'Brien go somewhere else in the Big Ten, but he went to Ohio State, right? It's like we can talk all we want about rivals and Penn State not having a rival. And Ohio State is like a team that Penn State fans, understandably so, do not like very much, right? Can't really say it's a rivalry because it's been quite one-sided here, especially recently. But there's definitely going to be some uniqueness to that game for the Letterman, but I think also for Penn State fans, because when you go through what this program went through at that time in 2012, so many people are forever indebted to Bill O'Brien because of what they were able to do. So yeah, that's a story that I'm working on, but I'm with you on the innovation category. It's not going to move the needle drastically, but it's like he just inherited a hell of a good roster. I mean, you look at the plethora of riches and you say, man, is Ohio State lining up to go on a run? And it certainly feels that way to me. And then how does Penn State try to combat that, right? Because Tom Allen, it's like, okay, now you know what you're up against.
And Penn State has to play Ohio State this year.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Skip them like they do Michigan. I mean,
that's the crazy part about it is you say you look at it and you're like, all right. Now, I think because I was looking ahead at some stuff, because never focused on going 1-0 each week around here, just always focused on looking very far ahead. October 12th, John. Does that date ring anything for you this season, October 12th?
Is that USC?
Yes, Penn State at USC that same day. Ohio State travels to Oregon to play the Ducks. So that Ohio State one. Oregon is going to be like that. I was looking at it.
I have a request.
That's
then.
A good day.
Any schedule, TV people that are listening to this, please, I am asking politely, put one of those games at noon and the other one at 8 p.m. just so I can watch the Ohio State Oregon game. Yeah. Like, I'm not asking for a ton. Just allow me to watch those games because that
just give us
that
a
is
window.
Going to be incredible. Yeah, just give me some time. If it's at 8, great. I'll get my writing done before 8. We'll record this podcast that night for all of our listeners from Los Angeles and then get to watch Ohio State, Oregon. Something tells me that's not going to happen, though, and they're going to both kick off at the same time, much to my chagrin.
Yeah, maybe one of them gets big noon kicked, right? Maybe that's the...
Well, is the Ohio State game at Oregon, you said?
Yeah, it's at Oregon. Yeah.
Yeah, those are
at
those
USC.
Are,
so
yeah, those are 3:30 and 8 o'clock games if I've ever heard them. Which is unfortunate.
No,
for
no
us,
breakfast but, time football, probably, yeah.
Yeah, can't imagine. But no, this is like it's weird because I think Ohio State upgraded at quarterback this offseason. I'm not 100% certain of that. Like I think Will Howard is better. I also am confident that Will Howard will not have fit that Ryan Day offense as well. So I'll be curious to see what the offense looks like, if it looks different, if there's more run pass option, if there's, you know, less, you know what I mean, slinging it downfield and more like allowing the quarterback to move the ball with his legs. But the adding Quinshaw Judkins at running back alongside Travion Henderson.
Yeah.
Getting Emeka Egbuka back, I think, is the biggest addition they made, right? Like, even Will Howard aside, offensively, to be clear, because on defense, Caleb Downs is the biggest addition that anyone has ever made in the transfer portal on defense. But I think getting Egbuka back really will help things out on offense. They have the talent. I don't know. Listen, college football, a lot of it's about maximizing talent and getting those guys in position to succeed. And I'm not 100% certain that Bill O'Brien is the perfect candidate to do that, which I think, like, listen, that game is at Penn State next year. Penn State should have a very good, very creative, like I said, cutting edge offense. I don't know that that's going to be the case for Ohio State. And if Penn State has that kind of advantage, we see it year after year, game after game. Having an offense that can win you games is more important than having a defense that can win you games, right? We find out about it all the time. Like, and having those, that level of offense, well, because listen, you can point to like Michigan's defense and how good it was in the national title game, but really they won that game because they were able to control it with their offense, right? They were able to get those explosive plays that James Franklin talks about all the time. Washington beat Texas because of that. Alabama's inability to have that kind of offense was what kept them or held them back against Michigan. So I just think like, you have to be, you kind of need the defense to play on their back foot, right? Like you need to be out dictating the terms. And I don't know that Bill O'Brien is the offensive coordinator that kind of dictates the terms in that way.
Here's the thing, John, you said that I was doing okay. And then you brought all of my wounds back from the Packers, who have never had a great defense for the vast majority of my lifetime.
I said college football for a reason.
And I just was starting to go back down that rabbit hole. I was doing so well. I was moving on. And now I'm sad. But yeah, so I guess that's time to transition away from Ohio State and Penn State.
Listen, it could be worse. Time, well, you could have started the year 10-1 and then gotten bounced in the first round of the playoffs. Yeah,
it can always be worse. You know, and I'm not one of those sports fans. And you and I, we were talking about this before we started recording. I'm not one of those people that says, oh yeah, but next year. No, when the window is there, however surprising it may be, that's the opportunity because it's, man, sports are, it's and fleeting. By the way, and if you're the hot team and you catch lightning in the bottle, like I think that's what's so, and I know for Penn State fans, I've heard this many a times from you all over the years, like that's what's so weird with the 2016 team was right. Had they gotten in that playoff, like it just, you never know when you're that hot team.
Well, that's what I was going to mention. I've seen it like the 2017 Eagles that won the Super Bowl. The reason that was so fun was because it was so unexpected with Nick Foles at quarterback, right? Like the Phillies a couple years ago making the World Series against the Astros. Like that was so fun because it was unexpected. Once you have the weight of expectations, less fun, right? Like things change. I mean, we're both Sixers fans. Like when the Sixers first made it to the second round of the playoffs with Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, it was like, okay, like this is great. And then it's not fun anymore to make it just that far. So,
and now it's just fun. I think like, it's just fun to watch Doc Rivers from afar now.
Yeah, I'm going to enjoy that way more than anybody else. And I promise you, I'm going to enjoy it more than Bucks fans will, especially in the playoffs. Oh, yeah. But no, it's sports are fleeting in that sense. You think the window's open forever. Your team makes the Super Bowl. Your quarterback has the best performance of his life. And suddenly you're bounced in the first round the next year. Like that happens a lot. And so I think you kind of need to capitalize when you have it. And that's why like, honestly, this coming year is so important for Penn State. There is some weight. There is like the weight of expectations there, of course. But like this is their first chance to be like, okay, we're in the playoff and now we can, you know, win a couple games and mess around and suddenly be further than you'd expect. Because the first time you do it, it can feel that way, right? Like I'm sure fans will want to win a national title next year. They always do. But I think the first time Penn State makes the playoff, there is going to be that like not necessarily relief, but that joy of like, hey, look, we did it, right? Like they
you're
get
in
to
the
feel
conversation
that way. The way
now.
The way that we talk about feeling about, you know, the teams that we root for, like it is that same feeling. And so once it happens, like this year is really important because I'm not going to say it's the most fun it's ever going to be or anything like that, but there's going to be the lowest expectations once you get there, if they get there. And that's why it's so important for them to get there.
Which is so crazy to say that, because so much of the discourse the last 2 years was 2024. That's the year. And again, it's a good reminder of last year, right? You're coming off the Rose Bowl. Everything's looking up and everybody's saying, oh, Drew Aller, can't wait to see him for a full year. There was that genuine excitement. And here you are a year later. You've now replaced all three of your coordinators from last year. Your prized quarterback has had some really touch and go moments that make you wonder. He kind of, I think, needs to be recalibrated a little bit moving forward. And now you say, here you are, you're at this critical junior year for Drew Aller, for Nick Singleton, for Abdul Carter, Deni Dennis Sutton. And it's like, oh man, it's here already. And your window is still open slightly, but you've got all these changes. And that's to me what makes this year so interesting and so exciting, but is also such a reminder of, had you told me last year at this time that Penn State would be replacing all three coordinators a year later, I would have said no. Like I would have said Manny Diaz, sure.
Honestly,
I would have even said special teams, you don't know. But
I would have said that they must have made the playoff. right? Because that's usually the formula that gets your coordinators replaced. Like we saw it with Nick Saban for years at Alabama. Yeah. They made the playoffs so often that he was routinely replacing coordinators. And that's usually when that happens. And I wouldn't have expected Mike Yurcich to have been fired in November, right? I wouldn't have expected Stacey Collins to leave for a lateral move. Like, you're right. Like, it's all very fleeting, and especially in college sports, because that eligibility clock is short. It's not, it's never as long as it feels like it should be. And with Aller, like you said, it's like, it's already his junior year. He's already in the back half of his career, and he started 13 games. Like, that is, it's jarring to think about and how quick it can be. Cause listen, Drew Aller has to play better. I think he would be the first one to tell you that, but there's also a chance that his second year as a starter is his last at Penn State. And so, like,
you're dealing with 3 year windows. Yep.
Yes. And so, like, you have this tiny window, and that's why they need to capitalize on it. And, you know, you mentioned the change at special teams coordinator. Penn State, since you and I last recorded, hired Justin Lustig.
By the way, I totally ruined this, because when we last recorded at the end, I said, well, nothing can happen yet. They've got new coordinators. Yeah. And you said, John, you said, oh, what about Stacey Collins? And I was like, ho, yeah, sure, whatever. And then I think it was that night or the next day that the reports started coming out. Yeah.
And I was surprised that it happened. I don't think I was alone on that front, by the way. People in that building were a little surprised too that it happened. But Stacey Collins goes back home. You know, he's from the West Coast. He was at Boise State before he came to Penn State. Now he goes back to Boise State. You know, I never fault someone for making, again, I've said this a million times on this podcast, I never fault someone for making a decision that's best for them and their family. Like, that's it. And like, that's what it comes down to sometimes, especially in a special teams coordinator role, because that's the mobility there is not necessarily to, it's like you can become a head coach or you can stay a special teams coordinator. It feels like the kind of
case. Hey, he was also coaching the nickels, given, you know, don't forget
about and that. And the outside linebackers, as Lustig has taken over both of those roles as well. But like, the you don't see it often that the guy makes the jump from head coach or from special teams coordinator to head coach, right? Like John Harbaugh with the Ravens is the most obvious one.
Yeah.
But like, it just doesn't happen. So I don't blame him for chasing whatever makes him happy. And it seems like that's the case here. And Lustig is the replacement there who, listen, it's tough for me. I try to do as much of the film study and film work as I can with a lot of stuff. I'm not going to lie to you. I really don't know what I'm talking about with special teams most of the time. Like,
you
I
haven't
no
been watching Vandy's kickers and punters in your free time, John?
I could watch those reps a million times, and I still don't know that I would be able to discern much here, because you can't see like ball impact or anything. Mm-hmm. So it's harder to learn those things. And like his special teams units have been good. And that's like, so with special teams, especially for me anyways, I base it a lot off the data and what it tells you. And it will tell you that Lustig is a good special teams coordinator, and that Stacey Collins was a really good one too. And Penn State has some, you know, Lustig has some work to do to replace him, right? He's I think he's that level of coach, but he's got a big shoes to fill when it comes to special teams.
Yeah, and Penn State, we know that they need to find a kicker, and I think they have. Like, I think they probably have their guy via the transfer portal again. But to me, that's been like an interesting development the last few years. When you look at Alex Paquetta, who moved on to Rice, Sanders Zahedak has not become the guy yet. And I'm not sure if he will be, to be quite honest. And I think that's the interesting piece. When, yes, you absolutely have to develop specialists, and you know, a lot of people say think of it just like you would any position, right? With a true freshman throwing them out there right away, it's a different scenario. You don't want to do that. But Penn State has been really good at identifying transfer portal specialists and supplementing the roster that way. So that's kind of one of those storylines as we creep closer to spring that we're going to have to keep an eye on, because it is going to be interesting. Like, I think you look at last year what Alex Falcons was able to do, and like, hindsight, that was your most impactful transfer portal addition. Pretty crazy. I did see the other day, this popped up, which I'm sure you probably got like the first notification, since you were the lead conductor of the hype train. Do you see where Dante Cephas headed? Did you catch that?
Yeah, Dante Cephas. I think we talked about this a little bit, that he had visited there last time you and I recorded, but Dante Cephas headed to Kansas State. Listen, Avery Johnson, their quarterback, is really good. Their offense was fun, I should say, under Colin Klein, who I think went to Texas A&M, if I remember correctly. That was like a month ago. So,
which feels like 12 years in this sport. Yeah.
Yeah. Reasonably could have changed jobs 12 times since then, if we've learned anything about this year's coaching carousel. But it'll be interesting to see how they kind of move forward without Klein. But I do think, like, I don't know, I wouldn't be that surprised if Cephas goes to Kansas State and has a good year in his last year of college. Like, you know,
man, I'm just imagining Penn State fans watching that happen and like that would be quite the twisting of the knife moment. Like,
yeah.
And I'm not saying that people are rooting for him not to succeed. I'm not saying that, but that would definitely be a tough look after the way he just was not the impactful guy here that they had hoped, that so many people had hoped.
Yeah, it's more about like him living up to like what happened here that it didn't work,
right,
but did happen there. You know, and who knows, maybe that offense could look a lot different too with Connor Riley in charge. Mm-hmm. He's been an offensive line coach in the past, so we'll see if it's still Colin Klein's offense that he was running at Kansas State. But yeah, I think honestly, I'm going to watch a lot of Kansas State in the fall. Like, I'm curious. Like, I want to know. Yeah,
you know what, John? Maybe we'll make that like a weekly segment in the fall. Your Cephas updates. I'll ask for them every week. Update. Yeah, I think that'll be a good thing for us to check in on during the season. Like, how are they doing elsewhere? We'll do like around the transfer globe or something like that.
And it's just Cephas. There's no one
just
else.
Cephas.
It's
yeah, just Cephas. Yeah, we have no other updates. Yeah.
We need to find someone like this. You know what? We do have someone like this. Son of former Green Bay Packer legend, Donald Driver, Christian mm-hmm. Driver.
Christian Driver, Minnesota.
This can be the official Audrey segment. Is
that's true.
Those Minnesota games. Yeah, we've each got our respective.
We've got our receiver. We got our guy.
Yeah. Yeah, and we can debate which one of those is better. I'm going to put my money on Cephas for that one.
Yeah, you've got 1 year. I've got years that I can try and build this
That's
investment.
True.
Yeah, that. But now that we're on the receiving corps, John, we do know because the roster came out shortly, like maybe a week after the spring semester started here, so like a week or so ago, and the roster was updated with all the transfer additions. So Julian Fleming is now officially a Nittany Lion. And we'll get to more on him and his car dealership commercial in a bit. That's but then right. You also have, you know, obviously the cornerback additions, the transfer kicker that I alluded to earlier. But then you see that there's some guys that are still on this roster, meaning they haven't left. They didn't make an announcement saying they were coming back. They didn't make an announcement saying they were leaving. Because as James Franklin said earlier this season, well, why does there need to be an announcement for everything? Well, I don't know, because that's 2024 and that's how the sport works. But Keandre Lambert-Smith still on the roster. And another one that I think is kind of a sneaky, important, slightly under the radar, somewhat to some extent, not a subtraction, is that Sal right. Wormley is still here. So Keandre Lambert-Smith, Sal Wormley still on this roster. But keep in mind, now there is that next transfer portal window in April that will come right after Penn State finishes spring ball. There is that window. So again, this does not mean that these folks are for sure going to be here next season, but it means that they're here in the winter, which counts for something, I think.
Yeah, and it helps with spring ball, right? Like it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think Penn State has a pretty clear top three at receiver right now. And
do
in
they, Fleming, John?
Wallace and Lambert-Smith. I'm not dismissing the chance that they add another receiver, which we will see how that could potentially impact the wide receiver room. I don't think it can hurt to add another wide receiver. But no, I think you're right with Wormley. I think that is a more important, I almost said addition, but I think it's a more important keep than people realize, right? Like it's a starting level guard, a guy that you know you can plug in there and feel confident about, gives you a little bit more flexibility. We know that offensive tackle is a little bit of a question mark, to say the least, heading into the spring, right? Like you and I talked about last time, what the plan could be with Nolan Rucci and Drew Shelton. I still think, like, in an ideal world, Rucci just proves he can be the go-to left tackle, but I would still probably say that ends up being Shelton at left tackle and Rucci at right tackle. Now, maybe if Rucci comes in and proves to be better than Shelton, I think you'd rather have him on the left side because they've both played there in the past and they can – you know what I mean? You would rather have your better pass protector protecting Drew Aller's blind side. But I either way, they need those guys to be good, right? And having Wormley in the middle at one of the guard spots, I think helps quite a bit because you're losing Hunter Norzad at center. There are questions about what that's going to look like. Will it be Nick Dawkins? Will it be Venga Ioane? Like, is he going to slide down and you know, will someone else play guard? I don't know. There's a lot of stuff that we're going to find out here in, 2 months when spring ball starts, a month and a half, whenever that is.
Yeah, probably less than two, yeah.
I know, it's crazy. It's like, it ended less than a month ago, and I'm like, oh, yeah, spring ball is kind of close. But yeah, I think, you know, strengthening that interior and making sure the interior is going to be solid will go a long ways in at least helping the tackles feel more comfortable, right? Without having to feel like they have too much on their plate.
Yeah, this is, it's going to be a critical spring for so many reasons, right? You have the OC change, you have the DC change, you have the special teams transitions. Then on top of that, you have this offensive line that I don't want to say maybe got taken for granted last year, the last 2 years, but it might have in some regards just because
I think it did.
Because it feels like, you know, the floor around here was kind of set, right? They came in, they exceeded that. And then people are going to say, well, yeah, but look at the numbers, and they're going to nitpick, you know, Nick Singleton, Catron Allen, all those types of things. But I think if you look at the totality of it, of what this line was able to do, Phil Troutwine has done a really, really good job, not just on the recruiting trail, but also with developing the guys that they had. But there's a reset coming with this line, whether folks are talking about it or willing to think about it or not. And it could be drastic in some spots, and that's why you hope that the Nolan Ricci move works out well, so that way you feel really good about what you have, because they do feel good about Drew Shelton. But again, is it the left side, the right side? But like, keep in mind, you are replacing one of the best offensive tackles in college football, right? Like, it's like, naturally, it's not going to be as good next year with a departure like that. You're going to have a new center, right? So there's going to be transitions there. Now, they've got a lot of intriguing younger guys on this roster. Javon Williams, Alex Birchmeyer, Anthony Donka is somebody I've gone through the snap counts for this season. I have a couple stories up on The Athletic about that. You look at Donka's snaps. Obviously, the Peach Bowl is a big part of that. He was the freshman who, off the top of my head, had the second most snaps of any freshman. You know who was first, John?
Is this on offense exclusively?
No, overall, whole roster. Most snaps by a freshman this year.
I'm gonna do bad podcasting and make us sit here silently while I try and think of this.
I'll wait, John. That's fine. I'll wait.
Obviously, wasn't it quarterback? Obviously, wasn't it running back? Were no other offensive linemen there? No tight ends I can think of. No wide receivers I can think of.
You might want to think of the other side of the ball.
Yeah, it wasn't. I want to. All right, I'm down to two.
Should I give you letters?
I know this, No. I'm down to two. Actually, three. King Mac, Tony Rojas, and Jameel Lyons are the three.
Mm-mm.
None of those three.
Think of four.
Is it on? And this is on defense.
On defense.
How soon
they forget?
I know. Legitimately, this is what happens, by the way. When the season ends,
like three weeks after a bowl game, and we don't even remember.
If you asked me to name 10 Penn State players right now, I'd be like, oh, I don't know. That's going to be tough. I'm trying to shut it off and all.
Folks, and that's your cue. Don't forget to rate, review, subscribe.
Do you give up? Oh, wait. Was Cam Miller was...
He's not a freshman, John. John,
right,
freshman.
That's what I'm confused.
No. Like, Cam Miller is not a freshman. He's heading into his third year.
I am hung up on this.
If I give you, like, the initials or the first letter...
Zion Tracy?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was special team snaps?
No, defense. Well, because the Peach Bowl numbers upped it a lot, too.
Oh, see, yeah. This is the problem. I, like I assume most of our listeners, have blocked out the Peach Bowl.
Yeah.
And have not been thinking about it.
No, it was Zion Tracy. Gosh, now you're making me second guess everything. Zion Tracy.
Elliot Washington probably up there.
Zion Tracy, Tony Rojas, Donka. And I believe off the top of my head, those are the top three. I have it over here.
Audrey says fading away from her microphone, so no one.
Yeah, I have it over here. Here it is. If I can find the numbers, as I flip.
This is the kind of off-season podcasting you can only get from the Nittany Dispatch.
Yeah, this is everything they tell you.
Next up, we're just gonna list some guys, and we're just gonna start listing some random wide receivers.
Zion Tracy, 138 snaps with the defense. Just talking. Defensive snaps, 138. Tony Rojas, 112. Jameel Lyons, 90. Elliot Washington, 78. King Mack, 65. And to put Zion Tracy's 138 snaps into perspective, Jordan Vandenberg was ahead of him with 148. Amin Vanover was slightly behind him at 136. So again, just a little bit of perspective there, you know, because sometimes I bring notes, but just don't keep them anywhere near where I That's actually right. need them to be.
And so we can listen to you slowly talk like this as you slowly yeah. fade in and out of the mic. But no, I do think, you know, Donka is someone that is going mm-hmm. to be a part of the picture no matter what. To get us back to what we were talking about before we went on a 3 minute of me trying to think of people. I do think Donka is someone that's going to be involved here. I did not expect snaps. Him to play that well. Did not 92. Expect him to play that well in the Peach Bowl. Like, I just didn't.
Yeah.
And I thought he was good and moved better than I thought he would, which is going to be important if he's going to play on the outside. So I think that's another solution, right? Like, if either Shelton or Rucci is not to the level that they'd expect, is Donka one of the stars there? I don't think that's outside the realm of possibility.
Yeah, that is not something that I expected that we'd be talking about or thinking about at this time last year. Heck, even like 6 months ago. I mean, it's just such a surprising development for a true freshman to be in this position. But John, there's been a bit of a viral moment on our beat in the past week. You know, we hear so much about NIL and how it's gone off the rails and how it's become, in many instances, pay for play, right? And that was not the intention. Well, I think it has been the intention some places. That's been kind of what's happened at quite a few places. But when it's done right, I think from the get-go, what I was most excited about when NIL came about was like, okay, we're going to see some really corny commercials with local businesses and these star athletes, and it's going to be great, right? And we saw it with the kid, Dakoldis Crawford, right? With the,
yes,
he was at Nebraska, the air conditioning, the heating unit commercial. That was yes. great. It was brilliant. Like, that's the kind of content that I wanted to see out of name, image, and likeness. And then we finally got something like that on the Penn State beat last week. Julian Fleming
with has a sledgehammer.
An NIL deal. Yes, with a it was a massive hit with a sledgehammer. Julian Fleming has an NIL deal with Blaze Alexander, which is the car dealership, which I found out this week because people love to say, well, Audrey, what do you do in the off season? Well, one of the days this week, I called Blaze Alexander and was speaking to their people about a commercial photo shoot and everything they've done with Julian Fleming. So really hard hitting stuff in the off season sometimes. But it was a great example of you pair a guy who is obviously extremely popular. You look at the dealership in Lewisburg. It's about 30 minutes away from Julian's hometown in Catawissa, where he started at Southern Columbia. So brilliant, like makes sense, makes, you know, the whole angle of it, I get. But then you go to the commercial and the marketing team at Blaze Alexander says, you know what? They told Julian Fleming, we're going to have some fun. We're going to let you smash a car. And Fleming completely leaned into the role, which is what made, I think, this commercial hilarious. Because it starts out, he's on top of a Toyota, smashing it with a sledgehammer. Then they brought in a forklift, as I found out, because I wanted to make sure that he didn't actually flip the car himself, just to be clear. Because, you know, or that he got hurt.
They did do a good editing job, I will say, with like not making it seem 100. I mean, I had assumed that he did not flip that car, but they did do a good editing job of making you doubt it just for a second. Like, was that him back there?
So I had to call him, John. I had to get on the phone because I was just like, make sure he didn't flip that car. Did he? He did not. There was a forklift. But they did in the commercial. He's driving a Jeep and he drives it over the hood of the Toyota, the smashed up Toyota. And they did let him do that. Like, he was in there like doing that, which I think is very much like the folks I spoke to at Blaze Alexander said that Julian had a great time doing the commercial, that he was great to work with, did all of his own stunts with the exception of, you know, flipping the car. But I think that it's a great example of, you know, this is a local business that this ad was going viral. There was some thought, actually, when I talked to them on Monday, that there was some thought that it might end up on SportsCenter, that it kind of gained that much traction, which, again, we're talking a dealership here. But also, John, the point of my phone call to them was a little bit twofold, because obviously I had a lot of commercial questions, as you know. I always have questions.
Yeah, naturally. But
also, yeah, as they found out, the poor folks at the car dealership were like, why is this woman calling us?
It's tough to be have that unveiled to you all at once on your first phone call with Audrey when you're just incessantly bombarded with questions for 20 minutes.
Got a lot of questions.
Some insight into that. this podcast is usually Audrey and I talking 40 minutes before it starts, planning. For instance, today we plan to start recording at 4:00. I think we started at 5:00. So that's usually
how it goes. And then I got a phone call. Somebody called me.
That's right.
It's always a train wreck around here. But the other part of my call was, you know, the internet sleuths, John, had noticed, and you and I noticed because they noticed, and it became a thing. Shortly after Julian Fleming entered the transfer portal, he posts that Instagram story with the Blaze Alexander decal on a vehicle. And so that was kind of, was he tipping his hand? Did we know that he was going to come to Penn State because of the Blaze Alexander decal, which is the official, like, or one of Penn State's biggest partners, right? Like, they're a very prominent business, and they've done a lot with NIL. They also are going to have an NIL deal with Drew Aller. So maybe he'll actually get the flip a car. I don't know. All the more reason I'm gonna have to call them back. But
that's right.
You know, the decal gate, I guess we can call it, with Fleming, he will be driving a Dodge Ram truck. I don't know the exact specifications, if it's indeed the same one or not. But you know, there was not, apparently, is what I was told, there was not a link to be made between the dealership and him at that time. Now, he is a local guy, and they are a local car dealership, so you never know, right? Could have just been in looking at cars, John. You don't know. I mean, anybody, you could. I'm not a big car person, so I spent most of my Monday Googling, like, cars and the prices of these vehicles, and they're very expensive, and yeah, so that was my Monday. But I thought the commercial was great. And if you haven't seen it, check it out. I know I retweeted it. I know it's been, you know, circulating. If you're in the Lewisburg area, I'm sure you've seen it. And they are going to do more commercials with them too. So they are a little bit concerned about how they're going to one-up themselves.
Yeah, it's tough to set that high of a bar right off the bat. But to the point about, like, not necessarily tipping their hand or what have you, I'm not going to comment. I'm going to let the facial expressions that I made when you said that and the ones that I'm currently making do the talking.
So if the folks are listening on audio, they're all the more reason to check us out on YouTube.
Head to YouTube for minute 41:40, somewhere in there, where I just glared condescendingly into the camera. But no, I think you're right. Like, I think a lot of there's been some missed opportunities for great humor here. I'm glad they did this. It's just funny. Like, I got a good enjoyment out of watching it. But yeah, I think we're going to see, honestly, some of this stuff might start to fade away, right? As you get, like, people get a little afraid to realize or to put out when their timelines were for things like this, right? When stuff like that happens. And I think we're also heading toward revenue sharing, and this not being really an NIL thing anyways. We're heading toward schools being able to get kids money. And so, like, I don't know. I think this is going to be a very brief era, but a very fun and a very funny one. While we had it. But yeah, no, that story that you wrote about that is up at The Athletic. People should go check that out. A lot of good stuff, as always.
You know, John, the other thing, and this is probably, now I'm going to have to probably contact the folks that gave Drew Aller the Tesla to drive, because if he's got a deal with Blaze Alexander,
yeah, I didn't think about what that.
Like, or does he have two cars? Does the deal not include a car? I don't know.
Was it a 1-year lease? Was that all the Tesla was?
I don't know. Like, what's
that's a good point.
This is what the offseason gives us time to do. And, like, Olu Fashanu had the Tesla, right? February. But now he presumably doesn't have the Tesla anymore, and he's not going to need it. I mean, he'll be able to get his own Tesla if he wants very soon. But
yeah.
So this is, you know, the NIL space is changing rapidly. But I hope we see some more local ads like that, because, again, like, that was the intention. It's great for the athlete, great for these local businesses, these companies. But yeah, I enjoyed it very much. So that's, as you mentioned, that's up at The Athletic. I also got a story on Bill O'Brien going to Ohio State that I was teasing earlier. That'll be up in the coming days. And, like, John, I'm not going to say that nothing else is going to happen, because we found out last time. I'm just a jinx.
Yeah, it will. And I'm very concerned about that. Was on a bit of a hiatus for the last week or so, but before that had the analysis story of all the new transfer additions up at centerdaily.com. You can check that out there too. As Audrey said, check all of her stuff out at The Athletic. I will have some men's basketball stuff if that interests you. Hopefully in the near future, we'll see when those things come together. That team is confounding, and one that I spend too much brain power on trying to figure out what they are and who they are. So hopefully we'll have some more information on that in the near
this
future.
Time of year always reminds me Penn State wrestling season is starting to heat up.
I anticipate the Nittany Dispatch will be well represented at the BJC duel against Rutgers here in a couple weeks.
Yes, yes. I will be making my BJC debut for the winter season probably at that one. And I did do my credential request the other day for the Olympic trials, which are going to be in the BJC in April. Yep, so that's going to be fun. That'll be something unique. So yeah, there'll be some other stuff that we'll get into here, but obviously our focus
maybe
here
a rec hall men's basketball
let's
game?
Not get too crazy here, John.
I'm sure there will be fans that listen to this that will attend that game, and it is great.
The atmosphere is great. I went the last or the
no
first
promises
time
to those fans on the outcome, but the atmosphere I fully anticipate being really, really good and really, really cool. We, of course, always have wrestling stuff up at centerdaily.com, too. Nate Caba does a really good job of covering that for us, covering every duel. We've got rankings updates weekly when they happen. If you are interested on that front, because I am certain that there is crossover between the football fans and the wrestling fans here. And wrestling, continually very good. Spoiler alert, if you go see them or haven't paid attention, very, very good for a very, very long time and will be for the foreseeable future. So. I think that's a good place to end this week's episode, though. If you would like, please go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star rating review. That always helps us out. And if you're watching here on YouTube, like I said earlier, go ahead and hit the subscribe button, hit the like button down below. That helps us too. If you'd like to follow Audrey on Twitter, you can find her at @oddsnyder4. You can find me at John Sauber, no H in John. Read Audrey at The Athletic, as I said. Read me at centerdaily.com. Thank you for tuning in. Have a great day.